Welcome back, everybody, to Quid Pro Quo, the music podcast where I introduce my friends, loved ones, and colleagues to progressive rock music, and they get me to listen to whatever they want. And we've got a fun guest today, one of my favorite people, as all of my guests are. We have Autumn joining us today. Welcome, Autumn.
Hello. Good to be here.
Good to be here. You are, let's just dive in and tell everybody how we know one another. the story of how we met is one of my favorite stories of all time. I can give you the honor of telling this tale.
Sure. It does not paint me in a good light, I don't think.
I think it sets you up perfectly for who you are, though.
Yeah, you know? Sure. I get that. Yeah. I was coming to London. I lived in Windsor at the time. You were going to school with my partner, and I was coming to London to see her, and I refused to learn how the bus routes worked in London for some reason. And so I was on a very long walk from the bus station to the university, and while I was passing down a street near where a friend of mine lived, I thought I saw his roommate, and I was in a tunnel under a railroad track that was dark and creepy and full of cobwebs, and it was the middle of winter. And I only thought I saw that person at the very last second, so I reached out and grabbed them by the arm, turned, looked, saw it was not who I thought it was, and just went, oh, sorry, and just kept walking. And somehow didn't think in my head, like, I just did a really terrifying, weird thing. So I go and I meet my partner at the university at a bar with all of her friends, and we're all talking and having a drink and having a good time. And then you come in and are just like, hey, everyone, this really freaky thing happened to me where this absolute creep just like grabbed me in a tunnel. And I was like, oh, this is me. I'm sorry.
And from that point on, we've been best buds.
I mean, I can't believe it turned out positively from there. It's absolutely wild because it's a pretty ridiculous thing to do. Certainly not the kind of thing I would do anymore, but
like, you gave me the best gift ever, which is an amazing story.
It was a good story.
I love that story.
We got to talking about prog music at the time. Too. I had found very few people who cared about prog music in a way that I did, or cared about music in a way that I did. So it was a great meet cute, you know.
It was a very,
very great romantic.
It was great. And we just got talking about prog music, and both of us at the time were huge progressive metal fans, like Dream Theater, and I was just starting to get into Haken at that point as well. And so just like finding somebody that appreciated the same kind of music that I loved was so rare for me. It's like, I need to hang on to this person, because I remember both of us were crushed when we found out that Mike Portnoy left Dream Theater, because that was around that same time too. And now our spirits are lifted back up. You would say that the spirit has carried on with Mike Portnoy coming back into the fold.
I would call myself cautiously optimistic, you know. I'm excited. Certainly, I'll listen to everything they put out. The most recent Liquid Tension made me feel that they really still have it.
Yeah.
So I'm excited for that. But I don't know. It's been a while, and who knows what they'll turn out next. I'm again cautiously optimistic.
I'm in the exact same boat.
I came into prog through like power metal, so like a lot of like very very nerdy old Finnish men singing about like emerald swords and stuff like that. That was like how I dove really deep into metal. And I remember a teacher in high school said that a song that I had playing at lunchtime sounded a bit like Dream Theater, and I was like, Dream Theater, who are they? So I LimeWire, I think, back in the day, and I downloaded this monstrously large file called A Change of Seasons. And I was like, what is this nonsense? How long is this? And then I listened to it over and over and over again. And I was like, Jesus Christ, this is incredible.
So. And it was funny because when we were like, you've been a guest of mine that I've wanted to have on for quite a while because I know you have this big wealth of like that power metal background. And so we can transition a little bit into the
Oh.
albums that we have. Oh no, am I frozen? I'm going to wait until it catches up because I know my
Nope,
internet has
you're all right.
been. I'm good. Okay. My internet has been horrible
You've
lately.
done a
So,
couple little freezes, but
but overall, it's been okay. All right. So yeah, I
no,
was
that's too bad.
here we go. So I was excited to hear what kind of music you were going to give to me. And when we were chatting back and forth about, you know, the albums that we were going to give one another, you had mentioned, is power metal okay? And I'm like, yes, please. So when you gave me the album that you gave me, you kind of threw me for a loop.
I did choose something a little different. I was looking through a lot of the power metal I used to listen to. A lot of it was Stratovarius, Sonata Arctica, bands kind of like that. And while I felt like there was some cool stuff there, I kind of wanted to talk more about something that I've been exploring more recently, which is rap music. You know, I didn't have rap music in my life when I was younger. Like I just didn't have friends who listened to it. My parents old, so they listened to like Baroque music and 50s doo-wop. So it's, you know, so I really didn't have a lot of modern music in my life. And in a job I was in a little while ago, one of my coworkers, I got to talking about sort of the forerunners of genres, or of I was talking about it in terms of games because I was playing some old video games and finding it a little difficult because those ideas that I was finding in those games had been iterated on so many times and were so much more playable nowadays. Like even a recent big release like Baldur's Gate 3, which people absolutely love and I love, this is a great time, is fantastic. And I've already played Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, and they're a real slog to get through mechanically. Like when I played through Baldur's Gate 1, I got to the end, I was like, oh my God, I have to do this again. And then when I started Baldur's Gate 2, I was like, console self gain a million experience. Okay. Now I don't have to deal with this combat system and stuff like that. So anyway, we were talking about that. And I was talking about how I had started to enjoy some more recent rap music, or and that was rap music from the like the 2010s ish, the early 2010s. And she made the point that, well, at the I think at the point I came off as saying that I thought all rap kind of before that was bad, which it wasn't my intention, but she thought it was really important that people understood the progenitors of genres and respected them and felt for them. And you know, I'm still exploring and understanding that. So I've been finding artists that I like and trying to look at their early work and move through to their more recent stuff. So so the album I picked was 1999 by Joey Badass, who is, I think, a really, really talented rapper. Like, again, and on this, pretty uneducated. Like, I assume there are lots of people out there who would know much better than me, or who would connect with a lot of the things he talks about, and and get a lot of more specific references that are in this music. But he is one of the rappers who kind of brought me into the genre, because I found that his lyricism and his wordplay felt a lot like the complexity that I really enjoyed in prog music, but lyrically. And you know, prog music musically often very good, sometimes lyrically a little less. You know, I love Dream Theater, they don't have the best lyrics.
No, that's fair. And this is one of the like I am very much in the same boat in that like I struggle with rap music. I don't have the context. I don't have the essentially the cultural background to make me fully appreciate rap music. And I know that kind of going in, and I always try to remind myself instead of just because, you know, when I was a kid, I would always just write it off as just bad. It's like, I don't get it. I don't connect with it, therefore equals bad. And I've always tried to challenge myself, but I don't know. I still struggle with rap music. I've had a handful of rap artists on this podcast, in terms of like listening to their material. And yeah, it was an interesting experience, getting to listen to this for a couple of times. So before we dive deeply into your album, the album that I gave to you is it's an artist that we have featured here on the show before, but this is their sophomore album of Experiments in Mass Appeal, by a band called Frost. And part of the reason why I love this album, this was kind of at a transitional moment within the neo prog sphere. Up until that point, neo prog was very symphonic based. It was very theatrical. You know, it got its start in the 80s, which was part of the reason why they were calling it neo, because in the 80s, prog was practically dead. So you had like a handful of these bands that were trying to keep prog alive in this neo style, you know, keeping the theatrics from Genesis and King Crimson and infusing it with a lot of that like heavy synth-led stuff that was going on at the time. And that kept the genre afloat till about the mid 2000s, like 2005, 2006. But I found around 2007 and 2008, right when this album was released, they started to shift into punchier, sharper tracks and a lot more aggressive and a lot more heavy, almost to the point of being metal. And I feel like this album was really that linchpin, because the year before they dropped their debut album of Million Town, which was very symphonic, very like longer stretches of music, 10, 20-minute tracks. And then they dropped this one a year and a bit after that, and it's tighter, it's punchier, and that's where that shift happened. This is, in my mind, where the neo prog went from that very theatrical symphonic sound to a very sharp metal sound. And I love both of the albums that they've put out. Their first two albums, later albums, they're fine. They're fine. And so, yeah, that was part of the reason why I wanted to put out this one, and talk about this album. So yeah, what did you think about Experiments in Mass Appeal from Frost? How was your experience with it?
So I hadn't heard anything by Frost before. I enjoyed it. I think it was, I thought it was good. I don't know. I don't know what my expectations were going in. I should have, I feel like I should have understood more from the title Experiments in Mass Appeal, in that they were kind of taking this prog sound and putting it into what felt like a more, a closer to a pop rock context. I believe I read at some point that they were taking some inspiration from like the Foo Fighters in it, and I was like, okay, I can kind of hear that. It really opens with a bang, which I like. You know, the song "Experiments in Mass Appeal," the title track, was, you know, that one's going on my playlists. Like, that one's sticking around. It has that big operatic feel, and it's not. It has that without being like kind of overly complex, and I found it really worked as a overture for the album in a big way. I found like a lot of the sort of motifs and tricks, I guess, kind of set themselves out there. I felt like for me it landed in kind of an uneasy space between the prog and the rock. Like, I wrote down in my notes it felt almost like a Big Mac made in a lab, in that it was like a very it was like taking this it was made by people who really know what they're doing, like some very talented musicians recreating, some very talented people recreating something that is supposed to have a more like mass market appeal. And I felt like it was a little too unnatural feeling for me. Now, I don't know if that's the best word to describe it, but it felt like I thought it was, don't get me wrong, like I still think it's good. It's It's not my favorite album, obviously, but I felt like a few of the motifs got a little repetitive. Like they do a lot of ascending and descending, like repetitive musical motions. They didn't do this too much, but I worried because the first and second songs both have the trick of like very, very quiet, suddenly quite loud
them.
And I was like, okay, we can play that trick a couple times. We can't play it every song. And that's not to say that the album is even meant for, you know, listening front to back necessarily. Some certainly are. I also noticed that the topics tended to be kind of dark. It felt like to me, it felt like, you know, someone, you know, dealing with the fact that I'm pretty sure some of the lyrics seem to be about someone dealing with the fact that they are stuck in a damaging, loveless, painful marriage. And I was like, that's some pretty dark stuff. And I feel like prog as a genre has the tools to express that musically in a really interesting way. Like using, you know, you have a pretty steady beat and then we throw in an odd time signature here and it kind of makes the listener like stumble for a moment, and that can do some work to make that feel a little off and strange. Or you can do that, the trick of like of not resolving a musical idea, you know, something like at the end of Change of Seasons, you know, they're doing the intro again as an outro but refuse to play the final notes, so your brain is like, really wanting it to happen, like come on. So I found it felt, listening straight through, it felt a little samey song to song. I think there were some really good stuff in there. I thought Toys, I think, got the closest to what I felt was like a the sort of pop rock prog mix that they were looking for. Like a lot harder. It had a more driving thing, but it felt poppy and fun in a way. Like, again, not fun. It's not a super fun album per se, but
yeah. No, that's fair. Yeah.
Oh, it did have a really lovely tone to the album. Like, I think musically it sounded very nice, and the instrument palette was good. Like, I felt they brought in some sort of external instruments at good times, got some strings in there and stuff. I really like that kind of thing. It made me want to go and check out Million Town and their more recent albums, because I'm like, I would kind of like to hear them stretch their muscles a bit. I feel like that context would help this album read a bit differently to me.
Yeah, in that case, I would recommend checking out Million Town, because I feel like Million Town is much more the progressive rock album. You know, it has a 20-minute track, it has a handful of 10-minute tracks, and I feel as if every album they've put out since then has been a little bit of a reaction against the last album. So this one is much more punchy, a lot more like rock focused because of how symphonic the first record was. And then the third record is trying to be a little bit more like progressive, a little bit more you know, opening up with some more experiments in that sense, but also again creating more of a rock album. And then the latest record that they've put out, because they almost had like a 10-year gap between the second and third record,
they're a super group, right? So they've presumably were off doing their own things.
Yeah. And it seems like now they're coming back a little bit more regularly, because the second and third or the third and fourth record came out in fairly shorter periods of time. So I don't know. I didn't really connect with the third and fourth record, Falling Satellites and Is It a Brand New Day or something? What was that fourth record? Clearly it made an impact on me, because I can remember Day and Age. That was the one. And I mean, it's fine, but I would recommend checking out Million Town if you want more of their sound. And I mean, for me, I have the context of like where the music was, because I listened to this album when it first came out, and kind of like what it was really doing with progressive rock at the time. I will admit that this album is a little bit more bumpy than Million Town in terms of start to finish listen. You know, there's a few songs on here that work a little bit less than what I would have appreciated from the debut. The thing that kept this album as being on par with the debut is when this album hits, it hits really, really hard. Like the title track, I really love Saline. It's I think the most popular track off of the album. It's a little bit more melodramatic. You know, it has a beautiful kind of build up, payoff, come back down, and then another build up and payoff. But for me, the track that keeps coming back was Dear Dead Days, that fifth track. Mm-hmm. There's something in the production side, there's something in the mixing and mastering and the sounds that they're able to capture that I still love. Even like to this day, I'll sit down and listen to it and really get a lot out of it. And the fact that it just like stops on a dime, you know, it feels like I run into a brick wall every time I listen to this track. I don't know if that's really a good thing, but like, I don't know. I feel like I run into a brick wall.
I see what you mean then. Yeah, certainly.
Mm-hmm. And then I don't know if you listened to the remixed and remastered version or if you listened to the original.
I think it was the original that I was listening to.
Okay.
I ended up finding out kind of about the remixed and remastered one when I was looking for like, oh, what's some history about this? And it's not a super well chronicled album, I don't feel, you know, but someone mentioned that existed, and I was like, oh, I should listen to that, but I haven't yet, I don't believe.
Yeah, there's not a whole lot of difference between the two albums. Obviously, like the one feels a little bit more polished because it was remixed and remastered in 2020, so they have like a little bit more of an update in production side. The main thing is that Wonderland, the last track, is actually split into two, so you have the actual track of Wonderland and then the secret track, because this was, you know, back in the days when CDs would have secret tracks on them. And so that secret track is actually found as a separate track, and there's no gap between the two tracks. It's just, secret track. Yeah.
It did feel, I was like, when I was looking through the song lengths and thinking like, oh, this is a prog band, and I saw a song that was slightly over a minute, I was like, wait a second.
Wait a minute.
This only happens in concept albums.
But
when I got to the end and I was like, no, I know this is longer than that. Are we doing secret tracks? Are we back to that? Are we doing that again? That's cool. So that was fun.
Yeah. What I really love is that, so I don't know if I have it with me, but like the original CD that I have came with a bonus disc with all of the tracks in FLAC format. And the fifth, so they actually have like the secret track, which I believe is a reworking of Wonderland itself, but the vocals, the lyrics on it are just like the one guy just kind of dicking around being like, oh, you didn't expect this track, did you? The only way you can listen to it is on your computer. How weird is that? Like, all right, I keep forgetting that most of the prog rockers are just a bunch of goobers. Like, they're you know? So I always like to end and cap off the conversation of an album and you've already kind of covered it a little bit, but would you dive deeper into this band and would you re-listen to this album?
Yeah, and you know what? I listened through this album a few times. I probably won't go back and listen to the full album again. I'm sure I'll listen to a few songs from it again. You know, like at least Experiments and Mass Appeal, like I said, is probably going on my general playlist. It just, I don't know, it just, it feels like the kind of, it manages to get from that like very gentle starting point to that big operatic feel that I really love to see in a lot of music. And it does it with relatively few tools. which is pretty impressive. Like it's mm-hmm. it's not, like I said, it's not an incredibly musically complex album or song, but it it makes good use of what's there. I'll probably mm-hmm. you know what, I'll probably listen through it, sort of like try out every song again, give mm-hmm. it like a minute or two and be like, oh yeah, okay, let's maybe add this to my rotation, maybe not. Mm-hmm. I will definitely check out Million Town. Mm-hmm. And I think on the basis of that, I might check out their third and fourth albums. So
yeah, my favorite song from them is one that they never officially released. It was done in the same time, mm-hmm. and it's called The Dividing Line. It's a 16-minute big epic, and they finally released it in 2020 with in like a conglomeration, a compilation album called This and That, and it was like the first track off of that. And it collected all those tracks that they never put down on an album up to that point. Okay. And yeah, I used to listen to that specifically on YouTube because it had a bunch of, like, it was like a wallpaper of Digimon characters.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, that's interesting, but okay. So
that's the way I found System of a Down when I was a teenager. Because it was like someone had made this Neon Genesis Evangelion AMV to Chop mm-hmm. Suey.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, hell yeah. I'm never going to look back on this and cringe horrifically.
Nope. Well, it was like, it's a little bit of a reverse, but that's how I found Princess Mononoke, because somebody put an AMV to Peter Gabriel's, what was it? It was like Rhythm of the Heat or something like that. It was the track off of his fourth album. And I love that song so much. And I found it. I'm like, what is this anime that's super gory and super bloody? And like, because at that point, the only anime that I knew was like Pokemon, Digimon, and Sailor Moon. Yep. And so I'm like, I have to find this. And it's like, oh yeah, it's Princess Mononoke.
I got lucky enough to find Gundam when I was pretty young. But other than that, like, when I was a teenager, one summer, I just found a site that had pirated all of this anime, and I spent like the whole summer watching it, like watching all of Naruto and Bleach and Samurai Champloo and all of these other things. It was mm-hmm, mm-hmm. a wonderful use of my time.
Anyway, moving on to something that has its nerdy moments, I will admit. And that mm-hmm. was one of the things that kept me engaged, because I will admit, 1999 from mm-hmm.
Joey Badass.
It was a challenge, I will admit. It was a challenge. But I did stick with it, you know. I kept listening to it. You know, there was something that kept me coming back to it, especially within the lyrics. And mm-hmm. I think the two tracks that really connected with me, Survival Tactics. Mm-hmm. Because of a lot of the nerdy references that are found on Survival Tactics. Mm-hmm. Same with World Domination has a number of really fun nerdy references to it. And I couldn't remember which track it was, but it ended with like the old Doom video game sounds.
yeah, that was
it was something that was a little bit further along the track lists.
It was Pennyroyal, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's Pennyroyal that ends with that.
That makes sense, because MF Doom was one of the producers, and I know that MF Doom is very nerdy. So yeah, it was, as I mentioned, it was a little bit of a challenge for me. musically, I find rap very, and again, this is just strictly musically, very simplistic. Mm-hmm. Because that's not the focal point. The focal point is the lyrics, it's the rhymes, it's the images and the play with words. You know, the play with words and the lyrics are really the main leading guitars from a rock song. And I always have to kind of stop and pay attention, because I have to retrain my brain on how to listen to music. Because mm-hmm. my brain will listen to music first and almost never even pay attention to the lyrics. I'll hear the shape of the lyric, but I won't actually hear the words. So having to like force my brain to be like, no, listen to the words. It's like, but I want to listen to the music. I'm like, don't care about that. Listen to the words. It's always a challenge. But I found the listen still very rewarding, and I really loved his play with words and his wordplay. And yeah, I think I really enjoyed a lot of the because what this was in 2012. So, you know, I could see how this was laying the foundation for a lot of rappers moving forward. You know, because I had listened to artists like Stormzy for this podcast, and Kendrick Lamar, just because he's so huge and influential. I can see how, you know, Joey Badass was laying the foundation for them to kind of take the mantle and continue with that. And just having some really amazing producers on this, like MF Doom, you know, you're going to get really, really good music out of it. So.
So yeah, a lot of the way that I even started to get into some rap music was just seeing what certain producers would do. DJ Premier, I find like almost any song I listen to that he's touched, I'm like, God damn, that is so cool and so good. I tended to, like, I didn't get in through what I would say is a more like traditional kind of rap beat. I got in through these sort of remixes of, you know, orchestral sounding music, or maybe something that's got like a more of a chill jazz feel or something like that as the underlying stuff. And then with that, I was able to appreciate more of the lyricism that was on top of it. So yeah, I found that Waves on this album really had that for me. That's how I kind of went back to this. I came to Joey Badass through a later album. And the song, specifically the song Paper Trails, which I think is really, really good. But yeah, I, like I said, I went back because I wanted to kind of go through his career and kind of understand it, because I find that with a lot of modern rap, I am just way behind the times. I don't get it. I don't get it in the way of like, you know, the kids and the rap music, but in the way of like, I don't know what this has built upon. So like, if I listened to, you know, one of the first rap artists I listened to any amount was Childish Gambino, because, you know, I watched Community, and I even prior to that, I watched like Derek Comedy and stuff. And I was like, who's this kid? He does rap. Let's check that out. And I listened to his album Camp, and I loved it. Like, I thought, oh my God, this is so cool. I listen back now and I'm like, it's a bit of an incel. He's got a lot of real incel sentiments on that album. But some of, and I've tried to listen to some of his more recent stuff, and while it's good, certainly, and interesting, it's just doing things I kind of don't get, you know? And I felt like I needed to broaden my earlier understanding and see where artists come from and where they go. Like, and something wild to me on this album, Joey is 17.
That's crazy.
Right? He is 17 years old on this album, and he was born in 95. And I feel like his, you know, his lyricism, his wordplay, his passion is really incredible. And I think he has some of the, you know, unconsidered opinions of a 17-year-old. Something that is a struggle for me when I listen to rap music is like homophobia and misogyny and transphobia. It's not subtle, and it's pretty pervasive in the genre. Not that I, you know, thinking of who I was at 17, I'm not surprised that kind of stuff would be there. Like, I cannot imagine that I would have had better opinions. And it does hurt some of the music for me, but there are other things around it that I can still like, not in spite of, but kind of alongside, recognizing the criticism that those kinds of things deserve.
I feel like on this album, especially with some of the more like politically charged tracks that are on here, there's like, I'm trying to think of the right way to put it. It's like the idea is there, but like the way that it is being expressed could use a little bit of a fine tuning. You know, it's kind of like you're taking a shotgun when you need a scalpel, or you're taking a sledgehammer when what you need is like a pair of scissors. So I could see like a little bit of refining happening there. And yeah, there was like some language on there that I was just like, ooh, maybe they could have rephrase that just a little bit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, maybe we don't want to turn a phrase to such the extent. But yeah, I also absolutely. Know that that's part of the genre, right?
Yeah, and that's a thing to struggle with, right? Like, mm-hmm. You know, going back, especially even further than this, you're going to get some rough stuff. Mm-hmm. But that kind mm-hmm. of thing. I don't know. You know, I have heard from some creators, from some Black creators, that homophobia and transphobia and misogyny are big problems in certain Black communities. I have no firsthand knowledge of that kind of thing, but I understand how, you know, that had permeated communities I was a part of, uh-huh. and how hard it was for some of them to let go. Like, I, you know, gamers are pretty bad about a lot of this stuff, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
I've played a lot of games. I've played a lot of, you know, games in competitive settings and had people join a game and their name is a racial slur. And I'm like, oh, cool.
Yep.
Oh, I love that this is a part of the thing I like, you know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So yeah, it's complicated, right? Like, yeah. it doesn't take away all of the incredible lyricism that exists, but it still hurts.
Yeah.
I think I lost my train of thought.
That's all right. These things happen.
Yeah. So the political stuff. Yeah, I was kind of impressed with the sort of passion and strength of that, but I do agree that it's not very precise. It's interesting mm-hmm. to hear a very political, aggressively political song like Survival Tactics or something like that, that is happening, that is a song made right in the middle of the Obama administration. You know, when for me, I understood that politics were out there a lot, but mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. they were far less aggressive, divisive, and, you know, directly coming for me.
Yeah.
You know, well, as an individual.
I feel as if that track, specifically Survival Instincts.
Tactics,
thank you. Yeah. I was trying to, like, I know it's survival something. I'm trying to remember. I watched something last night where, you know, they were basically talking about how in the, like, transitioning from the 90s into the 2000s and even a little bit into like the 2010s, there was this kind of collective agreement amongst most of America that, like, racism had been solved. It's like, we had elected Obama, you know, we're no longer watching the Songs of the South on Disney, like, racism is done, right? And I feel as if this track and a lot of the hip hop and rap artists were like, no, it is not. Like, I don't know where this idea came from, where you're making very racist jokes on NBC's The Office, and that's just fine. Yeah. We can't really keep laughing about it. We actually need to do something about it. And that was one of the things that came into my mind when I was listening to Survival Tactics. I'm like, yeah, this was like a direct call out of that kind of pervasive kind of behavior that a lot of white people were exhibiting, being like, that's fine, like, it's all over, right? It's like, I mean, no, it's not.
I think you can definitely read that in it. Yeah. I do think that for that time there was a lot of joking about that stuff. I know there was among me and my friends. Mm-hmm. Like, we, you know, we joked about race in ways that I am not keen to have to think about, but, you know, yeah. we definitely did say some dumb shit. And you know, at the time, my favorite comedian was a guy named Louis C.K.
Mm-hmm.
who was a very edgy guy who joked about race and all these other things because, you know, oh, we're just joking, it's not that serious. And then, like, some stuff changes, you know? Trump gets elected. Louis C.K. gets outed as a sex monster. It really changes that stuff and how you feel about it and how okay it feels to laugh at it.
Yeah.
And I feel like marginalized people, especially Black people and especially Black women, have really always been ahead of the curve in terms mm-hmm. of that kind of stuff. Like, they can see it so much more clearly. It's something that I wasn't thinking about, probably even when this album came out, was intersectionalism in, mm-hmm. in you know, social issues. So
Absolutely.
Feminism was a thing to me, but Black feminism was not a separate thing, or you know, Hispanic feminism or something like that. And to, and you know, slowly through listening to some of this music and stuff, I got to understand just how different and unequal the playing field really is, even in the strides that are made to equality. You know, I think about the way that my mom talked about feminism and feminist struggle, and I think about the things that I hear rappers talk about with their mothers. And in a lot of rappers' lives, you know, they have a very, very strong bond with their mother, and the way that's expressed, it was, you know, Joey Badass even has it a bit. I believe I got from this album that his parents stayed together. He certainly seems to respect them and appreciate their advice and stuff, even though they seem like they were pretty strict. You know, I didn't have that kind of relationship with my parents because the world was not out to get me in the way that it is was out to get him. So some of that coming through, you know, it was really fascinating, beautiful. Actually, a song that really got me for it was Tech N9ne's "Aw Yeah."
No, yeah,
it's got an interesting title. It's Tech N9ne sort of shouting at God, being like, "Yeah, this is how things are, really." And he ends it with a really primal scream about the death of his mother, who was, you know, obviously so important to him. And I was like, "Damn, like, there's a lot I don't understand here about this." About this this struggle, basically. And I think stuff like Survival Tactics, Waves a bit has it, of like, yeah, I see why these kids want to shoot for the stars, you know, want to be rich. They want to, they always mention like, you know, I'm going to have all the best cars and I'm going to have a perfect life and I'm going to get my mama out of the life she lives in. And I'm like, and for me, like, I live in a, terrible situation compared to my parents. They're super well off. They're fine. They don't need me. Anyway.
No, that's, it's a fascinating conversation. And I love that this music is able to kind of prime the pump and allow these conversations to happen. Cause unfortunately progressive rock really doesn't have those kinds of conversations, you know?
Yeah. I wonder about that kind of thing sometimes. I was re-listening to like Dream Theater's In the Name of God. And I know that like religion is obviously a thing that really matters to some members of that band, you know, like Portnoy, obviously it's a big deal. He went through AA and clearly finds a lot of comfort in religion and stuff. But the thing they were talking about in that, I believe, is like the David Koresh Waco Branch Davidians massacre thing.
Yeah.
And that is pretty easy to take a political stance on. It's bad. Like all those people died because they were, you know, hanging with a maniac. They're not making these sort of direct condemnations of, you know, systems, more of people and events. And I think that's something I would like to see more in progressive music. Not that I necessarily trust all the progressive musicians I love to have good opinions that align with mine, but you know.
No, absolutely. It's, I always say that, like, unfortunately, progressive rock is the most like white male dominated genres out there. And it's like, how can progressive rock be racist when we have Animals as Leaders with the single Black guy? It's that's not good, you guys. It's really not good.
That's actually a pretty strong indication.
So, anyway. Thank you so much, Autumn, for coming on and chatting, opening up this conversation, introducing me to Joey Badass, because up until last week, I didn't even know he was a thing. So, yeah, thanks for broadening my horizons in that sense.
Well, and thank you. I had a lot of fun talking about it. I had a lot of fun listening to Experiments and Mass Appeal, and I'm basically always happy to get a music recommendation from you. I think you have a good understanding of music, and I trust your recommendations and tastes. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. I hope that this was a good episode for the listeners, and said some interesting things. And hopefully, I didn't stick my foot too far down my own throat talking about things I don't know about. It's definitely a risk with a genre like this, but I promise there are other people out there who know way better than me, and I bow to their opinions.
Oh, absolutely. I'm in the same boat. Yeah. So yeah, and thank you all for tuning in and joining us on our conversation. If you want to reach out to us, I have all the social medias down below. If people want to reach out to you, Autumn, how would they be able to find you? Or do they, you just want them to contact me and I will vet anything that comes through?
Probably best they contact you. I used to be on a bunch of social media, but it's always so bad for my mental health.
Yeah.
Like I was on Twitter when it was still Twitter a while ago, but it was such a bummer all the damn time. I was on TikTok, but I couldn't help but make my feed a real bummer too. I get my social media mostly secondhand now.
That's so. Probably for the best. Yeah. I have to take what I call my social media breaks, where it's like a full month where I just delete all my apps on my phone and I don't bother checking them out on my laptop. So yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you all for watching. And until next time, everybody. So great we're all together now. So great we're all